I remember one time we were playing in Norfolk, Nebraska, at this place called the Red Bull, and we just played this one of our own songs, and this guy drunk came up out of the crowd and he said, "That's the worst song I've ever heard in my life." Unfortunately, sometimes you remember the negative stuff as much as the positive stuff.
Lawrence in the 1970s and liked bands like The Birds, Buffalo Springfield, and the Flying Burrito Brothers, Tree Frog was the band to see. Known locally for their epic four-hour performances at places like Liberty Hall and Off the Wall Hall, Tree Frog was actually a nationally touring band that was just one big breakaway from the big time. They never did catch that break, but they did spend a decade on the road playing every college campus and back alley bar from Athens, Georgia to Missoula, Montana. Though Tree Frog disbanded shortly after the disco craze hit, members reunite every couple years to play at Liberty Hall. In anticipation of the band's show this Saturday, I decided it would be fun to reminisce with guitarist and pedal steel slinger Lynn Piller on the history of the band as well as Lawrence's music scene back in the 70s. In between clips of our interview, you'll be hearing songs from Tree Frog's only proper album, a 1975 vinyl release called Better Late Than Never. Thanks for listening and hope you enjoy our trip back in time.
So what scene did you kind of identify with when you were first starting out? Was it the British Invasion or was it the Flying Burrito Brothers? Was it that time yet when country was starting to get cool again?
Right, that's exactly right. This was just at the end of the Buffalo Springfield days, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash had just come out, and Neil Young was doing his solo albums, and albums like Sweetheart of the Rodeo, the Birds record, and Flying Burrito Brothers, that was about the time that they were out, too. We did some of their songs a little bit later on after our current drummer, Gary Durrett, joined the band. And it wasn't so much British Invasion, it was most definitely country rock. Eagles had just come out then, and with the singing that they did, everybody was really knocked out by that, so mm-hmm. We wanted to be like that.
Now, how many covers did you play, or as opposed to originals?
When we started out, it was all covers. We did Steve Miller, Buffalo Springfield, Beatles, Birds, what are some others? Eric Clapton, Blind Faith, and then we did some Beach Boys songs and some old, you know, kind of garage rock type stuff that we did from back in our high school bands.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was all covers at first. And then Eric Elder started writing songs, and Jim Fay started writing songs, and I wrote a few, not very many. Eric was the primary songwriter, and later on a guy named Scott Piper joined the band, and he became another songwriter that didn't write quite as much as Eric, but he was very prolific himself. So there was a time when almost everything that we played was original, and then we kind of backed off of that a little bit to put in a few of our I guess, roots tunes as well, you know, just as points of reference, and also because people like hearing familiar stuff, too.
Yeah, was it more of a cover band scene around Lawrence at the time?
Or? Yeah, I would say so, pretty much. There were other bands that did original material, but the ones that were working the most the ones that the kids out in Western Kansas liked the most were the ones that played cover material.
Road is all you like.
we were looking for a drummer, and we were playing a lot of acoustic music together, Eric Elder, Jim Fay, and myself, just, you know, doing the harmony thing, making the vocals sound really good. And the brother-in-law of a friend of ours happened to be a record producer from Nashville, and he heard us play one time and invited us down to Nashville to do a demo tape. And he footed the bill for it. We did, you know, just a one-day deal, just cranked out as many songs as we could, and he used studio musicians to play everything, and we did all the singing. And we came back with stars in our eyes and thought it was going to be just a matter of time before we were in the big time.
So, I'm sorry, I had to interrupt you for a second.
Sure.
The first record you guys made, you didn't play any of the instruments on it?
No, huh? It was just Nashville studio musicians. That's the way they work down there.
Yeah, I mean, by today's standards, maybe not so weird in the Nashville scene, uh-huh. But at least from a contemporary standpoint, if you, you know, suggested to Wilco, hey guys, you know, your new record's going to be great, but we don't want you to play any of the instruments on it. Was that like a blow to your ego at all to get down there and be like, what's up with this?
Well, we, you know, it was a little bit of a surprise, but he explained to us that the main thing that we wanted to do was do as many songs as we could, and these guys are used to playing in the refined, more sensitive environment of the recording studio, where, and they just played real simple parts. It wasn't like they did all this fancy stuff. They basically were just a vehicle for the voices to be over. And so, you know, you'd kind of hope that you'd get to play, but that was the way it was. And it was, it's a nice, that recording is a nice representation of where we were at that time.
And that album is?
That wasn't an album. That was a demo tape that he shopped around. He was shopping the tunes to other artists around there and things like that. And probably more approaching it that way as trying to pitch the music as opposed to pitching the band, I guess you might say.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what he was interested in.
What was your dream at the time? Did you want to be the band or just the behind-the-scenes guy who wrote the song?
Oh, we wanted to be a band and perform.
Yeah.
We wanted to do the rock
you
and roll.
You wanted it all.
Yeah.
Sure. But maybe that was a little bit more of a distant dream at that point with the whole way the structure was built.
Right. But what that tape did is it enabled us to send it to people that wanted to know what we sound like, so it opened some doors for us, and it also enabled us to interest a drummer that we were looking for, a guy named Gary Durrett, who's from Kansas City, and who had been touring around with what we called the Mid-Continent bands. They were bands that were from a booking agency here in town called Mid-Continent, and they would go on the road and play clubs around the Midwest, so he was a seasoned pro. He played a little bit in Chicago and things like that, and he was really, really good player, and also had a lot, you know, a lot of ambition like we did, so it kind of kicked it up a notch, and we started playing on a little bit more regional basis rather than just around town and in Kansas City.
And he couldn't even swim. Then he went over the falls with a smile still on his face. Then he went over the falls, and we never found a trace of him. Then he went over the falls. Then he went over the falls. Then he went over the falls.
That band played around all over the Midwest for quite a few years, and during the time that we were together, we decided to ask a friend of ours named Scott Piper to join the band, because he had a really great voice and was, as I said before, a songwriter, and he played violin as well as a Rickenbacker 12 string, so it had kind of a, you know, a pretty cool sound, nice texture for the music that we were trying to do. And so he joined the band, and that was the fivesome there: Eric Elder, Jim Fay, Scott Piper, Gary Durrett, and myself. And we toured around. The northernmost place we got to was Missoula, Montana, and the southernmost place we got to with that was Athens, Georgia. And we just kind of toured around in a white Chevy van for about five or six years, and got to play a few shows with big name bands, and got to play in some fairly cool clubs. Played out in Colorado a lot. That was a lot of fun. And
now this is a full time occupation for you,
right?
This is what you spend most of your doing on the road. Tell me about the lifestyle out on the road. You know, how was it?
Well, it was. You know, we had to watch how much money we were spending, and so all five of us and all of our equipment, and at those times you carried your own PA, because clubs didn't have a PA, you had to have your own sound system. All of us plus the PA and our instruments and amps and stuff traveled in this old Chevy van, and we all slept in one room. We had two double beds and a rollaway, since there were five of us, and we were like brothers on the road. It was we had lots of crazy times and good times and frustrating times, but it was a lot of happy memories. When you're younger, your needs are, I guess, you know, you can rough it a lot easier, I guess I'll say, and so it didn't really occur to us that it was anything out of the ordinary. So we traveled around that way. Mm-hmm. We played usually 4 nights a week, sometimes 5, and 4 sets a night, usually from 9 to 1, and that was what we did. And that is a difference between then and the shows now, because now a lot of times there'll be many bands on one show and they'll do one set, you know, it's a real showpiece that they've kind of polished, whereas we had to kind of intersperse, you know, you had a little longer time period to fill, and so it was more of a bar band deal rather than a performance band deal, I guess. We did shows where we just did one set, but those we didn't do those as often as we did, you know, play the whole night long. Well, we played, what is now Liberty Hall was called the Lawrence Opera House in those days, and we would play there some, and that was during the height of the disco craze, and the place got closed down and made into a disco club for a while. They didn't have live music anymore, and so there were two guys, Steve Mason and Brian McKinney, opened up a music store and with a performance venue behind it that used to be a roller rink, and that is the space that's now the Bottleneck. And at that time it didn't have the low acoustical ceiling, it just had this big kind of rounded, it was a real echoey place with a wooden floor and a really high rounded wooden ceiling, and they called it Off the Wall Hall. And we had some of our best shows in the Tree Frog days at that place, because it held about the same number of people then as it does now, and so you could have, you know, 200 or 300 people and have a pretty rockin' show, and it was a lot of fun. So we used to play there, and then there was another place, I was hoping I could remember the name of it, it was called the Red Baron for a while, it was out on just a little bit south of 23rd Street that some of the bands played at. But the main place where we played was off the Wall Hall and what is now Liberty Hall. And the reason why we booked the Tree Frog shows at Liberty Hall now is because of all the times that we played there back then. It brings back really great memories, and that's such a wonderful room, and my hat's really off to the people that invested in that place and made it as cool as it is now.
Was there a little bit of a to-do when Liberty Hall turned into a disco club? Was there some, you know, rebellion within the ranks of perhaps the rock music scene?
Well, everybody was pretty bummed out because it was obviously the coolest place to play, but, you know, we didn't have any power, so we just gravitated to where, you know, over to Off the Wall Hall, and it lasted, and it's still going today under another name, and the disco place is long since gone. So people voted with their dollars and voted the disco craze out.
What? How did you feel about that when it hit?
Disgusted, because it was anti music. They didn't use live musicians to perform it in the clubs, and it's just the way some pop music is. You know, it was fairly mindless to our way of thinking, but it was popular at the time, so.
Mm. Did you do anything to actively protest disco, burn any records?
No, we didn't. I remember Gary Durrett made up a little rhyme, do the bump disco jerk, help keep live bands out of work. You know, just that's about as much as it got. You know, we were just frustrated. There wasn't much we could do except just find a different place to play.
Yeah.